Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Thanks for being with us on a Wednesday night. And it was yesterday that the news broke that baseball Hall of Famer, and some think the greatest baseball player of all time, Willie Mays, had passed away in a very unique situation because the news was released during a Cubs-San Francisco Giants game where Willie Mays was famous with the San Francisco Giants. So it was quite a moment, I think, for Major League Baseball and the timing of it and how it was discussed. And some of that probably in terms of, you know, holding the story or being respectful of the family, some of that may have been by design as well. But it just made for quite a baseball viewing or listening experience last night. And just reading a few graphs from the Associated Press's story about Willie Mays, they said the electrifying Say Hey Kid, whose singular combination of talent, drive, and exuberance made him one of baseball's greatest and most beloved players, has died. He was 93. Mays's family and the San Francisco Giants jointly announced Tuesday night that he had died earlier in the afternoon in the Bay Area. Quote, "My father has passed away peacefully and among loved ones." That's his son, Michael Mays, said in a statement released by the club. "I want to thank you all from the bottom of my broken heart for the unwavering love that you have shown him over the years. You have been his life's blood." And that is a close quote. The center fielder, who began his professional career in the Negro Leagues in 1948, had been baseball's oldest living Hall of Famer. He was voted into the Hall in 1979, the first year of eligibility, and in 1999 followed only Babe Ruth on the Sporting News' list of the game's top stars. The Giants retired his uniform number 24 and set their AT&T Park in San Francisco on Willie Mays Plaza. Mays died 2 days before a game between the Giants and the St. Louis Cardinals to honor the Negro Leagues at Richwood Fields in Birmingham, Alabama. Here's another quote. "All of Major League Baseball is mourning today as we gathered at the very ballpark where his career and legacy like no other began." And that's from Commissioner Rob Manfred. Goes on to say, "Willie Mays took his all-around brilliance from Birmingham, the Black Barons of the Negro League, American League, to the historic Giants franchise. From coast to coast, Willie inspired generations of players and fans as the game grew and truly earned its place in our national pastime." Close quote. Again, that's from Rob Manfred right there. And he was the superstar of all superstars. And more, I mean, when you just take rough polls of people, if you ask them, maybe some of them have to be of a certain age or over a certain age, they will, Willie Mays' name inevitably comes up as a guy who could be talked about as the greatest baseball player of all time. He's one of those guys who, to me, I did not get to see him play, but he becomes one of those guys to me that becomes mythical, almost like he wasn't even real, like Babe Ruth. Like, I have a hard time wrapping my head around him as a player, like an actual real player who lots of people saw in common times. Like, I just think of them as almost just like a superhero who wasn't real, but Willie Mays and Babe Ruth, oh, they were real. And Willie Mays, considered again by many as the greatest baseball player of all time. And I don't think there's like a great, there's arguments against it for sure, but I don't think that there's a lot of evidence that would pile up against making the argument that Willie Mays was one of the greatest baseball players of all time, if not the greatest baseball player of all time. But I mentioned how this was, I happened to be watching the game on Marquee last night, and heard. I did not see anything on Twitter. I don't even know if there really was much. I mean, that was where it was reported to me, Boog Shambi and Jim Deshaies, who reported it and then did a very elegant job of weaving it in and out of their broadcast throughout a lot of the night. I also thought it was interesting that right when they were explaining it, I believe there was a two-run double hit by the Giants to tie the game up at that point. I'm like, oh no, they're going to win this game just spiritually. I mean, it, like, you have to allow San Francisco to win the game, but they did not. The Cubs ended up winning it. But really, we got some different angles, and Tyler Buterbaugh, our executive producer tonight, set me up with some of these cuts that we should listen to. Let's start with, just because obviously San Francisco, he was theirs to a large degree. So let's listen in on the San Francisco broadcast, a guy that you know, a Hall of Famer, former ESPN announcer, John Miller, announcing the Willie Mays death and what came of their conversation.
For many, many years, Willie Mays broke in 1951. He played games here, has had great moments here. And Willie Mays' name has been much on our minds with the Giants' special game the night after tomorrow coming up in Birmingham, Alabama, where Willie began his brilliant and fabled career at Rickwood Field with the old Birmingham Black Barons of the so-called Negro Leagues. But we are very sad now to relay this information that has just been released by the Giants, that the great Willie Mays has passed away. He passed away peacefully this afternoon at the age of 93. As the Giants come to bat here in the fifth inning with Jorge Soler, then Nick Ahmed, and Yastrzemski. The Giants release said, "It is with great sadness that we announce that Giants legend and Hall of Famer Willie Mays passed away peacefully this afternoon." Michael Mays, Willie's son, quoted as saying, "My father has passed away peacefully and among loved ones. I want to thank you all from the bottom of my broken heart." That one is off the inside. "For the unwavering love you have shown him over the years. You have been his life's blood." So over to first base goes Jorge Soler. The Giants get a leadoff man aboard here in the fifth inning. Greg Johnson, the Giants chairman, said, "Today we have lost a true legend. In the pantheon of baseball greats, Willie Mays' combination of tremendous talent, keen intellect, showmanship, and boundless joy set him apart. A 24-time All-Star. The Say Hey Kid is the ultimate forever Giant. He had a profound influence not only on the game of baseball, but on the fabric of America. He was an inspiration and a hero who will be forever remembered and deeply missed."
John Miller on the San Francisco Giants broadcast, again, on the passing away of the great Willie Mays. And by the way, it was Kurt Casale who had a two-run hit in that inning. As you heard it brewing, oh, there's a walk. And like, I know some Cubs fans are like, oh, this is beautiful, but what the hell is going on here with the Cubs? Are they going to blow this game again? That's how we live as Cubs fans right now. But very elegant of John Miller last night. Dave Fleming, also of the San Francisco Giants broadcast, announcing Willie Mays' death.
"I'm having a hard time saying the words. But we found out just a little while ago, and the Giants have now made an announcement. Here's a ground ball to second. Estrada throws out Pete Crow Armstrong, the all-time greatest Giant. Number 24, Willie Mays, has passed away today at the age of 93. And right as we get ready to head to his hometown and honor the great Willie Mays, We have to say goodbye. So we'll step aside here for a moment and come back, and the ball game will continue. And obviously we're going to talk a lot more about Willie tonight and over the next many, many days. I hate to be the one to have to pass that news along, but Willie Mays today has died at the age of 93. We'll be back on the KNBR Northern California Honda Dealers Radio Network.
Dave Fleming. Wow. I had not heard that. And that is heavy duty. That is what you call real right there. Dave Fleming announcing and having to give some sort of perspective on the Willie Mays death that was announced last night. One more. Here, actually, I got a couple more. I think I've got time for two. We'll see. This one I heard driving in here today, and I thought that this was just this says a lot about Willie Mays. And Pat Hughes, the Cubs play-by-play announcer, of course, right here on 670 The Score, and just a little ditty he had for Ron Coomer.
But we were talking right before Ian got this hit, so you had brought something up I'd never heard before until just now, that you talked about I don't know if you'd call it a tradition or what Willie Mays did as a respect factor in our game. Please tell the fans, I've never heard this before.
Here comes the 1-2 pitch. Swanson swings and misses, and that's strike three, out number one. I never saw Willie Mays really get angry. He argued a little bit, right? But mildly and very infrequently. And I never saw him get kicked out of a game. And he played 24 years, I think, in the big leagues. But part of what he did, the Giants occupied the first base dugout at Candlestick Park as Michael Bush steps into bat. And the pitch to Michael, swing and a miss. For every plate appearance, Willie Mays would never walk in front of the catcher and the umpire. He would always walk behind them and enter the batter's box on the third base side, because he was a right-handed batter. And my dad pointed that out to me and my brothers, and he said, I want you guys to notice that. He is showing respect to the umpire and the catcher by not walking in front of them. He's walking behind them.
Yeah.
And forevermore, then, whenever we were playing, we always went behind the catcher and the umpire. Yeah. Not a big deal, but just something that was unique about Mays.
Right.
A little chopper slowly toward first, fielded by Brooks. He will underhand the ball to Bivens, and that's out number two on the play. Hap goes to third.
But then the thing that sticks out to me, too, one, there's a respect factor of our game that just tells you all you need to know about the character of Willie Mays. The impact that anything that he did on the field and what it would do to the kids growing up in the Bay Area, right? I mean, there's just some things there that just, you know, and I'd never heard that before. That's really, really interesting and neat.
Yeah, Willie Mays with kind of a golf etiquette mentality almost. Like, don't walk in front of this. Don't disrespect me. I mean, that is pretty cool. That is, and I wonder for how many other people, just because some of the other things about Willie Mays are just so outstanding in terms of his actual playing prowess, that to hear something like that in a time where certainly not everybody respected him because of the color of his skin, that man obviously symbolically would probably say a lot about him for sure. So I thought that was great. Heard that story again right here on The Score, which was a Cubs win today over the Giants, 6-5, the final score earlier today. One more person that I want to hear from, because his perspective is always top-notch, and it hits home with Steve Stone of the White Sox broadcast. It does hit home with him, and you'll hear why right now. Here is Stoney. I assume this is on NBC Sports Chicago from last night, Tyler. Yeah, Steve Stone on NBC Sports Chicago talking about the death of Willie Mays.
Well, when I put on my first major league uniform, it was the uniform of the San Francisco Giants. And I remember the first game I pitched was against San Diego in San Diego, and I looked out to center field, and I saw number 24 out there. And I remember thinking, here's this relatively small right-handed starting pitcher, And Willie Mays is going to be chasing down my mistakes. And it was one of those moments, I was ready to make my first major league start, and yet this was what came to mind. Looking out at center field, one of the all-time greats. Some people believe he might have been the greatest player that ever played, because it appeared, to me at least, that his skill set was exactly what this game was all about. Everything that he could do, he did better than anybody else. I mean, whether it was run, he once said, you know, people keep talking about 40-40 guys or 40-50 guys. He said, if I knew stolen bases were important, I would have had 50 or 60 of those every year. But in the time he played, they weren't all that important. But a lot of people don't realize, from the time he was in New York, the time he went to San Francisco, he had to completely change his batting stroke. He was a guy that would pull the ball when he was playing at the old Polo Grounds in New York. He went to San Francisco, and the wind just howled in from left field. He had to change his stroke to be able to hit to right center field, which is how he hit 660 home runs. However, what a gifted athlete, a wonderful player, who spent a great deal of time in this game and was respected by just about anybody who ever wore a uniform. Because if you didn't respect that guy, you don't need to be in this game.
When you look at the video of some of the catches he made, running back over his shoulder. Was there a catch that you remember when you were on the mound that stood out the most?
Well, there was one catch that he made in conjunction with Bobby Bonds. Bobby Bonds was taller than Willie, maybe by a couple of inches. And there was one where they both were running to the right center field alley. They both jumped almost on cue to the same ball as it was leaving the ballpark. And Willie's glove went up about a foot higher than Bobby's. As they both crashed into the wall together, they both slid down the fence together, and Willie had the baseball. And that particular catch was shown to a lot of different people, a lot of different places. It still remains an indelible impression that I had of Willie Mays and his ability, because Bonds was faster, he was taller, he was quicker, but he didn't get to the ball as quick as Willie did.
What'd you say to Willie after he came in after that catch?
Well, I mean, there's not much you can say. You just look at it and go, hey, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Not bad at all. Steve Stone on NBC Sports Chicago talking about Willie Mays, and just some great insights from some top-notch baseball guys and analysts right here on 670 The Score. When we come back, sneaking up on you, the NBA draft is coming soon, June 26th and 27th. The Bulls will pick 11th. It's not so much about the Bulls and who they're going to pick, because that's an awkward pick in the NBA draft. I mean, we're definitely going to talk about it, but really, what team is coming back from the Bulls? Which guy should they sign? What's going on with this Bulls team? We're going to catch up with Kendall Gill, the former NBA player, former Illini great, of course, with NBC Sports Chicago as well. Kendall Gill is next on The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The way I approach, you know, I'm going to look at a totality in this group. You know, this group hasn't worked, so we're going to, you know, there's a lot of great things in certain individual players and a lot of young guys that took a step forward, and it's positive, but in totality, as a group, it didn't work. So I'm going to have to find these answers in offseason.
I mean, hearing that again from Bulls president of basketball operations, Arturas Karnišovas, I mean, it is very decisive. It is not necessarily what we expected to hear from Karnišovas at the end of the season, because we had heard it put differently so many other times when an individual season failed. He said this group has not worked. That's from Arturas Karnišovas. And so change should be coming soon for the Chicago Bulls. And that is heavy. That is heavy-duty stuff And from Arturis Karnišovas, we welcome you back in on The Score. I am Mark Grody. As I said before we took the break, the draft is coming soon, June 26th and 27th. I'm going to be out at the Bulls facility that night with Chuck Swirsky doing a show. The Bulls will select 11th in the first round of it. So much Bulls to get into, and we are very happy to have on with us Kendall Gill, the former NBA great, former Illini great, and current great with NBC Sports Chicago as the Bulls analyst, as he gets ready to join us right here on 670 The Score on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline, Circa Sports app to be downloaded today. Kendall, how are you, sir?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I am doing well, and I want to pick up on Arturis Karnišovas and what he was saying right there and reminding us, and it felt like such a long time ago, that this group has not worked and that big changes should be coming. Where do you start with that, Kendall, in terms of how big the changes would be and if there's anything specific on your mind that you think he might be referring to when he talks about those changes?
Well, you know, I understand where Arturis was going, what direction he was taking the team. And right before the year that everybody came in, you signed Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, Vooch was here via trade the previous season. I went to see the Bulls practice, and I said to myself, this team is going to surprise everybody in the Eastern Conference, in the NBA for that matter. And, you know, lo and behold, they were number one, the number one seed throughout, all the way up until like right after All-Star break. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I totally understood how they put this team together and how they projected it to work. Unfortunately, it just didn't work because of injuries. I think that Lonzo Ball was the straw that stirred the drink. And even though Kobe White has come along great, Io has come along great, you know, still Lonzo Ball, you know, brought a different type of perspective to this team. You know, and, you know, play both sides of the basketball, gives you the outside shooting, gives you the defense. You know, I thought that both Lonzo and Caruso were first team all defenders. You know, it's just unfortunate that it didn't work. And they've had to deal with an enormous amount of injuries. You have Zach LaVine that gets hurt. You have Patrick Williams that gets hurt this year. Nobody anticipated those things happening. So, you know, AK tried to give it some time for things to work out because, you know, I've been part of franchises where you put a team together and it doesn't go well right away, or you have some bumps in the road and then they blow everything up and it becomes a mistake, because had you kept it together, then, you know, in the long run, you would have had success. I think that that was the frame of mind that Arturis was in. And but he's come to the conclusion that, you know, he needs to change. And I think that, you know, because he's tried it now with this group and they haven't gotten to the destination where they think they can go. So, you know, and great general managers make adjustments, and, you know, he's making an adjustment now.
You just did a great job of reminding me of how hard it is for these teams to break something up that they put together that they think is good. Like, in terms, I mean, there's some ego involved, of course, but I think the number one thing is this is their job. They, as you also reminded us, that for 50 plus games, yeah, the Bulls look really good. And we were applauding Arturis Karnišovas, and then, as you know, as you indicated, paraphrasing, it took him a while to admit it, to let it go. But it's got to be so difficult to do that for any team in sports, really, that hasn't been a disaster. I mean, they were 39-43. Yeah. They've been middling and obviously not making it to the real playoffs. But it's not like it's been a disaster, and we saw the upside of it, Kendall.
Yeah, it's by far been way away from a disaster. As a matter of fact, you know, I think that they've done a very good job considering what they've had to deal with. I mean, your point, in my opinion, I think Lonzo Ball was headed to a first-time All-Star selection. I think that he was perhaps could have been All-NBA if he had stayed healthy. You know, so you lose a guy like that, and then you have to deal with all the other injuries that we dealt with throughout the years, and you're still in the play-in, you know, both years, and you're still battling for that playoff position. And let's not forget, I mean, if Max Strus doesn't have an all-time game against Miami in the first season that Arturo, or the second season that Arturo took over, if he doesn't have an all-time game, the Bulls are in the playoffs. They beat the Miami Heat. So, you know, we can hold that as a feather in our cap. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. And, you know, I understand now, okay, you've given it time, which I think all GMs have to do. You got to give, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know, the old cliche. So you have to give it time. Okay, now it's not working. You see it's time to make the adjustments, and that's why they're starting to make the adjustments now. They have to make some moves now in order to reach the destination in which the Bulls are trying to reach.
No doubt about it, and there might be a process of elimination as well. What do you do with DeMar DeRozan has become and is going to be a free agent? Do you think that DeMar DeRozan is part of the future of the Chicago Bulls?
Oh, most definitely. I think that, you know, DeMar has done such a wonderful job here, not only producing but also being a leader in the locker room and a leader amongst the team. His teammates love him, you know, and he's embraced being the face of the franchise and comes to work each and every day. I think he's a guy that sets the example for the rest of the players because he shows up to work every day. You know, DeMar doesn't like to miss games. And that's what type of guy you need around your franchise in order to build a culture, in order to build a character. So he will definitely be here.
That's very, very interesting. I like how decisive you are about DeMar DeRozan. And I mean, you definitely got to give that guy help, but you know, it's nice when you find a guy, too, and I'm sure that you could talk about this, like where he's really happy to be with the Chicago Bulls. Like maybe his biggest seasons will have been with Toronto and obviously the years in San Antonio, but he really seems genuine, Kendall, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that he really likes being with this Chicago Bulls organization, period.
No, he loves being a Chicago Bull. I mean, he even goes to the Windy City Bulls game sometimes to watch
that's
the game.
Awesome.
So anytime you got a guy that's willing to do that, to go down and watch those guys,
yeah,
he definitely wants to be here. And, you know, he's in the twilight of his career, but still very productive. And, you know, his family, his kids are here now. I mean, you know, he's sort of kind of ingrained here in the Chicago community. I mean, that's why, you know, he wants to stay around, you know. And I think that DeMar can be productive for another at this level. I think DeMar can be productive for another 2 or 3 years. I mean, the way that he trains in the off season, you know, he boxes. He doesn't play as much basketball anymore to save his energy and to reduce the stress on his body in the summertime. So, you know, just look at his track record. DeMar is going to be there night in and night out.
No doubt about it. I mean, he's, again, a good guy to have on the team for sure.
Yeah.
I just wonder what's going to happen around him. And so that brings me to, Kendall, that brings me to Zach LaVine. And I look at it and maybe even oversimplified, and I say, he's going to be traded, right? I mean, they have to trade him at this point, right?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, they may trade him, but I don't think that, you know, it's a definite. You know, sometimes you can get with a player and, you know, sit down with he and the coach and the GM and try to work things out. You know, Zach is a talent. You know, I think that if Zach wanted to be top 10 in the league, all he had to do is add defense to his game. And, you know, if they do trade him, I like to see them get equal value. It's tough to get equal value for a guy like that. You know, and most teams know that he could possibly be traded or he will be on the trading block. So they're not going to give you equal value for him, you know. So I am hoping that in the long run, Zach and the Bulls can come to some type of happy medium and he can remain here. Because let's not forget, he was part of the of the first run that we had where the Bulls were number one in the Eastern Conference for that long a time. He was part of it. And, you know, he's a talented offensive player, one of the best in the league. And, you know, I made the mistake of leaving the Charlotte Hornets as a free agent when I was the third year in the league. I could not see the bright future that we could have had with me, Alonzo Mourning, and Larry Johnson as the big three. And, you know, I regret that decision even today, you know, because we could have done a lot of great things. But unfortunately, because of thinking the grass was greener on the other side, you know, I made a mistake. And, you know, I shouldn't have done that. Hopefully that won't happen here with the Bulls. Hopefully they can work things out.
That's really interesting on so many levels. I got a lot of questions going through my mind right now. Just hearing that story that I'm sure that you've told before, but I had not heard that. I didn't realize that you regretted that as much as you do. So what's running through my brain now is, how can you convince somebody of, you know, whatever Zach's age is, 28, 29 at this point, I may maybe a little bit younger, but how is it even possible to convince somebody of what might be better for them when you definitely, as you said with your story, you had that in your mind, this is what I'm doing and I don't care.
Right. Well, this is how you convince them. You got to tell them, listen, a rising tide lifts all boats, okay? Had I remained with the Charlotte Hornets, I probably would have made, you know, two or three all-star teams. I probably would have made two or three all-defensive teams, you know, because that team was rising. I mean, we were all averaging around 18 to 20 points a game. We were winning, you know, but I couldn't see the light, you know. And I think if Zach comes back and you know, he can see the future of what these guys did before, and if the Bulls can get on the run and play the way that they played two years ago or 3 years ago when Alonzo and DeMar came aboard, then everybody is going to get noticed and everybody will get recognition. And that's what I try to get young players to see, that if you work together and you win, everybody is going to get recognized. Everybody is going to get the shine that they're seeking.
How difficult would it be, though, and I'm not saying, again, the relationship is a disaster, but there'd be some repairing that would be needed in the relationship. Is that plausible?
Yeah, I'm sure there needs to be a lot of repairing in the relationship, but guess what? Winning cures all. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can come together and you can win, everybody forgets what happened in the past, and you know, they go on, and you know, they're glad that they stayed together. So, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't know what's going on in the front office. I don't know where they are or anything like this. This is just my perspective.
Yeah.
I would just like to see them keep those core guys together and then build around them.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, like you think, like Alex Caruso, there were reports about him that that there were teams very interested, you know, reportedly, and the Bulls did not have any interest in getting rid of Caruso, which kind of connoted to me that the Bulls still think that they could be dangerous this season, because that's a player that you only keep if you think you're probably going to be good, and you could use that luxury item of a great defensive player who hit some big shots for you as well. I guess my question is then, what is, like, doesn't there still have to be another splash somewhere, unless you're just so convinced that they could, that Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan and Kobe White, that these guys are stars enough to actually compete in the East with that?
Yeah. You know, I believe that the Bulls did not move on a trade with Alex Caruso because, one, this draft is not really a draft that's that strong, okay? And they can see the future. I know that the teams offered them picks and first-round picks and everything, but if you look at the draft, these guys know what they're doing. Mark Eversley knows what he's doing. AK knows, they know what they're doing. So I'm sure that they looked in the draft to see what those first-round picks would be if they did trade Alex. And they didn't like what they saw. So they decided to keep Alex, and, you know, this is when you have to be a savvy general manager. You know, you just can't move just to move.
Yeah.
And satisfy people that are saying, we need to make a trade, we need to make a trade. No, you don't do that, okay? So I think that they did a great job of holding on to what they had. I mean, they still tried to compete last year. Yeah, we were in the play-in game, but they still tried to compete, which was still, in my opinion, the right thing to do. And, you know, now summertime comes, now you have options. I mean, you never know. They may move Alex this summer. They may move Zach this summer. They may you never know. They may move Patrick Williams. I know he's a restricted free agent, yeah. But he could be a sign and trade. They got a lot of good pieces that they can move to make the team better. Now we just got to sit back and see what they do.
Kendall, that's some great stuff. Again, appreciate having you on, and I'm looking forward to talking to you soon and maybe talking draft with you soon, man.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you having me.
You got it. That is Kendall Gill. Learning some stuff about him. I had not heard that about him basically saying that to this moment right here on the score that he regrets wanting to move on from that super hyper-talented team in Charlotte. And he has a very idealistic view of the Bulls and that he believes that Zach LaVine could come back to this team and that's tenable, that you could repair the relationship and that they see the light that, you know, hey, man, look, we're going to keep, we got you, we got DeMar, we got hopefully Coby White is some version of the improvement that he made last year and Vooch here. Somewhere along the line, I'm not saying it has to be eliminating one of those guys, but there definitely has to be. You got to tell me about somebody else that's coming that would move the needle, if you will, or move the meter, whichever one you prefer, as per our conversation a little bit earlier. Coming up next on the show, I want to tell you about a project that I am working on that I think you will benefit from. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
So this Friday at 6 p.m., you will get to hear the premiere of A Salute to Sandberg, as I have the honor of hosting this one-hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryan Sandberg before his statue is unveiled at Wrigley Field 2 days later on Sunday. Again, that's this Friday, 6 to 7 p.m., right here on your home for the Cubs, 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. And that's a simple way to listen to Mully and Haw, or Bernstein and Holmes, or Parkinson Spiegel. Everything on The Score you can listen to on the free Odyssey app. Follow 670 The Score and the Odyssey app, and take us wherever you may go. So I've had a blast working on this project that we're doing, the documentary, as they are putting it, which, again, will premiere this Friday, and then I'm sure that you will hear it more. I don't have that exact schedule and have access to it once it airs, but I've been working a lot with Chris Tannehill and Ryan Porth and Mitch Rosen on putting this whole thing together, and today was amazing because, you know, obviously for this project, I've been telling you, I've been talking to Ryan Sandberg about it. And Chris Tannehill and I were in one of the production studios and we're getting ready to talk to Rhino on tape to talk to him about the statue unveiling and do a really, what turned out to be a really awesome interview with Sandberg. And you get to hear it in its entirety. But it's the ninth inning of the Cubs game. And which I'd been, you know, running around the hallways and paying attention to as much as I possibly could. But there we were, Tannehill and I sit in front of a TV, and Sandberg is asking about the game. We're getting ready to record this interview, and you could tell he kind of wanted to keep watch it. And of course, being that it's our jobs too, and I'm hosting and talking about the Cubs, yeah. And so Tanny turned up Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer in the booth, so Ryan Sandberg could listen to it through his phone at his third-party residence. So the three of us sat there and listened and watched. We'd listen to Pat and Ron and watch the Cubs game on the little TV in our production studio with all of us, well, mostly Sandberg commenting on the game along the way, which was just a blast and kind of surreal to a certain extent. just kind of watching Sandberg in real time, and the Cubs end up winning the game over the Giants by a final score of 6-5. So it's been an honor and a pleasure to work on this, and I think you will be entertained, and I know you will enjoy what we will premiere to you again, the one-hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryan Sandberg before his statue is unveiled at Wrigley Field a couple days after on Sunday, Friday night, 6 p.m., to 7 p.m. When we return, let's get back down on the field. We're going to talk about the Cubs with Michael Cirami. He covers the Cubs for Bleacher Nation. He is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Crotty on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
So this Friday at 6 p.m., you will get to hear the premiere of A Salute to Sandberg, as I have the honor of hosting this one-hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryan Sandberg before his statue is unveiled at Wrigley Field 2 days later on Sunday. Again, that's this Friday, 6 to 7 p.m., right here on your home for the Cubs, 670 The Score and the Odyssey app. And that's a simple way to listen to Mullin Haw or Bernstein and Holmes or Parkinson Spiegel. Everything on The Score you can listen to on the free Odyssey app. Follow 670 The Score and the Odyssey app and take us wherever you may go. So I've had a blast working on this project that we're doing. The documentary, as they are putting it, which again will premiere this Friday, and then I'm sure that you will hear it more. I don't have that exact schedule and have access to it once it airs, but I've been working a lot with Chris Tannehill and Ryan Porth and Mitch Rosen on putting this whole thing together. And today was amazing because, you know, obviously for this project, I've been telling you, I've been talking to Ryan Sandberg about it. And we, Chris Tannehill and I, were in one of the production studios and we're getting ready to talk to Rhino on tape to talk to him about the statue unveiling and do a really, what turned out to be a really awesome interview with Sandberg. And you get to hear it in its entirety. But it's the ninth inning of the Cubs game. It's the ninth inning of the Cubs game, and which I'd been, you know, running around the hallways and paying attention to as much as I possibly could. But there we were, Tannehill and I, sitting in front of a TV, and Sandberg is asking about the game. We're getting ready to record this interview, and you could tell he kind of wanted to keep watch it. And of course, being that it's our jobs too, and I'm hosting and talking about the Cubs, yeah. And so Tanny turned up Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer in the booth, so Ryan Sandberg could listen to it through his phone at his third-party residence. So the three of us sat there and listened and watched. We'd listen to Pat and Ron and watch the Cubs game on the little TV in our production studio with all of us. Well, mostly Sandberg commenting on the game along the way, which was just a blast and kind of surreal to a certain extent. Just kind of watching Sandberg in real time, and the Cubs end up winning the game over the Giants by a final score of 6-5. So it's been an honor and a pleasure to work on this, and I think you will be entertained, and I know you will enjoy what we will premiere to you again, the one-hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryan Sandberg before his statue is unveiled at Wrigley Field a couple days after on Sunday, Friday night, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. When we return, let's get back down on the field. We're going to talk about the Cubs with Michael Cirami. He covers the Cubs for Bleacher Nation. He is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.